Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
All right, let's see, can we do this? We're on the air, folks. We're having some problems. There we go. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard. Fighting non-violently.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live straight up out of the city of Chicago. Thank you for that. It is 6 o'clock, 6:01, straight up PM Chicago time, Central Standard Time. We had some difficulties on the show yesterday. I'm going to apologize for those who are left stranded. It happens sometimes. The lights went out. The computers were up. It happens. It happens. And lucky for me that a lot of my guests, they understand that. And they know when computer problems are abound. You just have to take care of it. Anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm drinking some coffee here, so some very hot coffee. I have a sore throat today. Hopefully, I can make it through it. All right, my guest today is author Brandi Miller. Interesting. That should very, very be interesting. And I want to say be nice to one another out there. There's no harm in being nice to people, treating people with respect. A lot of that has gone by the wayside. But we're going to try and bring it back on the George Wilder Jr. Show because it's all about making the world a better place. That's what this is all about. It's hard. It's tough. It's going to be rough. It's going to take you and me, but maybe we can do this. Who knows? And I say maybe because things get tough. But I won't be giving up. I will not give up until we can see some sort of a positive changes in trying to make the world a better place, even if it's just going out to help who needs help, if it needs working around in your community, getting involved with your state politics, because politics is everything, folks. You may not, a lot of people out there don't follow politics. They don't know what to make of it, but you can make this of it. Every aspect of what these people do in office is going to affect your bottom line, period. So you might as well get involved. It's about to, Trump's budget, healthcare budget, the repeal of Obamacare is about to go into effect. They're starting to vote on this thing, and it's going to affect you and me and a lot of other people. A lot of people are saying this is not good, and I don't think it's good either. If you read parts of the bill, they're trying to tweak it here and there, but still in all, it's going to be rough on older Americans, totally rough on older people, and that's a shame. These billionaires and millionaires can't do anything else in the world but sit around and figure out how to screw old people. That's that's the gist of it, folks. Sit around and figure out how to screw old people, not young people, not children, not baby, but seniors and the elderly, people who can barely, you know, walk or in wheelchairs, whatever, all these big guys can do is sit around and think about in Washington and in Congress, sit around and think about how to screw the elderly, the old folks, you know, and the majority of the people in Congress, senators and representatives, their constituency is made up of mostly seniors. You know, and a lot of these folks, their constituencies in their individual districts, they don't like this. And they're jumping in these Republicans' asses about that. And these Republicans are trying to find a way to keep their, you know, machonism about themselves by, you know, putting down these people who are jumping in their asses for not doing what they want them to do. But these Republicans and representatives in Congress and all these people are doing what they want to do. They're doing it for their party. They're not doing it for their constituency. And that's what's pissing the constituency off, because, you know, it's all about their party. It's not about the people in their district. It's not about the people who put their asses in office. It's about what they want, not what you and I want. So they dodge these town hall meetings because they know they're going to get their asses handed to them by the people who put them in office. And they come up with all kinds of ways of trying to slide out of it or trying to make something of it. And they're wrong. They work for the people those people in that district who voted their asses in office. They do not work for themselves. Everything that they do is for those people of that particular district that voted them in office. If they go against that, these people who put them in office have a right to jump in their asses. But these politicians in Washington, they think they're so above it all. They think they're so above it all. They're not used to having their asses handed to them because it's all about their policy. It's all about ruining Obama's legacy, even if their constituency is against it. You know, so that's what it's about here in Washington. And as you probably know, this guy, one of these representatives, House Intel Chief, tips off Trump. You probably heard about this. This guy, Representative, he's a Republican, and he goes to Donald Trump, tips Donald Trump off about there was a wiretap of his hotels, of his, well, the buildings with his name on it. Okay, because a lot of the buildings that have Trump on it doesn't mean that Trump owns that building. It means that the owner of those particular buildings or high rises, they're paying Trump for the use of his name to be put on those buildings, from my understanding. Well, anyway, some guy I never heard of, you probably never heard of either. They call him Representative Nunes, N-U-N-E-S. And he's going around saying that there was actually a wiretap of Trump Tower. However, it had nothing to do with Obama. There's still no evidence that Obama had something to do with this. So basically, this is baseless. But Trump and this guy, I mean, they're taking it like it's a win-win situation, like he was right. He wasn't right. He was wrong. There still is an investigation of him and his staff colluding with Russia, which is a felony, which is treason, which is imprisonment. And now they bring this guy out of nowhere to try to justify that there was a wiretap on Trump Tower. And he has no evidence. There is no evidence that he has evidence that I know of. So, and he talked to Trump before he went to the press on this. So therefore, that tells me and a lot of other people that this is something that Trump knew was coming. This is something that they talked about and then came out in the press with this. Now, see, if he'd have came out without talking to this about Trump, it might have had some validity. But now it does not. This guy is trying to, he's not saying that Obama tapped it. He's saying there's no evidence. There's no evidence for that. But he is saying that there was a tap on Trump Tower. But still, I don't see any evidence. Nobody has produced any evidence of that. And to me, it's it's a conspiracy. I think he and Trump mastermind this and threw it out there to the public. Because, folks, I'm going to tell you something. The way Donald Trump and his team has been lying to the American people, lying to us, why would we believe anything that comes out of his mouth? Why would we believe anything that comes out of this White House? I don't know. Donald Trump could, you know, he can tell, he can be telling the truth about some things, but his track record of lying will always say, hey, wow, no, anything that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth, it is, you got to give me some proof or some evidence, because everything that comes out of his mouth is going to be a lie. I mean, Donald Trump lies about lying. His staff lies about lying. And these guys, they lie every single day. They lie every single time they open their mouth. This guy here, Representative Nunes, Republican, he may be lying to say, to help Trump, to try to save Trump's ass from this Russian investigation by the Department of Justice. We don't know what's happening. This is why sometimes I tell people, stay tuned, get your popcorn, sit back. This is a fucking movie. I'm pretty sure Hollywood is saying, hey, wow, we're going to make a lot of money. We're going to produce this. All they got to do is hire Alec Baldwin to play Trump in this movie, and it's going to be a great movie. Hopefully, because this is a movie. 3 months into Trump's presidency, and he has become the most corrupt president ever in the United States. Of course, he would disagree with that because it's coming at him, but with a approval rating of 37%, that's enough evidence right there to tell you that this guy is the worst ever. He has just now put his daughter in the White House. His daughter is in an office above him in the White House. I don't know if it's above the Oval Office or not, but I know it's in the office. It's all over the news, folks. It's all over the press and everything. So you can always look that up for more information. But anyway, it really is appalling the way these people just spend taxpayer money, the Trump administration. And the White House belongs to you and me. It does not belong to Donald Trump and his children. And, you know, it doesn't. It belongs to you and me. We are the caretakers of that house. Trump just has it for a temporary amount of time, and they are abusing it. They are disrespecting it. The White House is like, whoa, the White House down or something. They are abusing it. They are mistreating it. They are disrespecting it. If you saw that photograph of Kellyanne Conway sitting on the White House couch in the Oval Office in a, some say, in a sexual position, anyway, it was totally, I don't think it was that much in a sexual position, but it was totally with her knees and feet all up on the couch in the White House. That was totally disrespectful. I think she apologized for that. But still in all, we don't know what they're doing behind closed doors when the cameras are not on. So if the cameras are not, she could be jumping up and down on the White House couch or the bed or something. we can't see it. The cameras are not there. But we do know that these people are capable of just totally disrespecting the White House, the people's house, the house that they will only occupy for 4 years, or maybe even less. Who knows if this investigation garners something. Okay, this guy, we don't know where he came from, but he's out here defending Trump. Defending, saying that there is was a wiretap, but it has nothing to do with Obama. Man tasked with investigating Trump ties to Russia makes friendly visit to the White House. His name is Representative Devin Nunes. This is a bombshell, discloses about surveillance reports. It's more questions than they answer. In other words, this guy is just throwing stuff out there and it gives more questions, but no answers, less answers. And this is all over the news today. Okay, I'm reading an article. Investigators don't normally brief the people that they're investigating, but on Wednesday afternoon, Representative Devin Nunes, Republican, California, the Republican who's leading a congressional investigation into whether the President Donald Trump team colluded with Russia to interfere in the 2016 election, went to the White House to talk to the president before he came out to talk to the American people. The names of Trump's associates and perhaps even Trump's own name appeared in surveillance reports compiled by U.S. intelligence agencies in the final months of the Obama administration, Nunes said he told Trump. We don't know what the hell he told Trump, okay? We're supposed to believe him what he said to Trump when nothing but lies come out of this administration. Nothing but bone lies come out of this administration. But Nunes' briefing with Trump broached the theme of an ongoing FBI investigation, the president's and his associates' connections to foreign powers. Nunes' objective appeared political. Of course, it's political. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and they're gonna get to this. I'm glad that the Democrats. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a liberal. A lot of people think I am because they feel that this show is leaning that way. I'm an independent. I keep saying that, but people still try to put that Democratic label on me. And I'll just tell them like it is. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I am a independent. As much as Bernie Sanders is an independent, I am one of those. And I'm proud to be that because, yeah, I voted Republican in the past years ago, and I voted Democrat in the past. But now I'm just sick of both parties. I think neither one are actually for the people. I think a lot of these people are just for them damn selves. You know, they get in the office, they're for themselves. And the only thing I can say, like I said yesterday on the show, before the show was totally interrupted and I had to scrap it. Folks, we have to vote come 2018. These Republicans, they're not going to vote for this health care because they know they're not going to vote for this health care because they know that the 2018 midterms are coming up and they could lose their jobs. At one point, Donald Trump threatened them and twisted their arms and say, hey, wow, if you don't vote for this health care bill, basically, you're going to lose your jobs. And basically, you put it in a nutshell, Donald Trump says, if you don't do what I tell you to do, regardless of what their constituency wants, Donald Trump says, if you don't do what I tell you to do on this health care bill, you're fired. That's basically what he's telling them. And Donald Trump can't fire anybody. They're going to be voted out because a lot of these Republicans, their constituencies are old Americans, seniors and elderly. I mean, if you look at some of these town halls that are given in some of these districts around the United States, most of these town halls are filled with older Americans jumping in these young guys and young women's asses about what they're doing in Washington, D.C., what they're doing with their vote. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of these people in these districts around America who are upset with their representative, they're going to act. They're going to do something. They're going to throw these assholes out, especially if they're making it hard for them. Those people did not vote for those representatives in Congress to make life hard for them. You know, and that's what these people are doing. So I would be remiss if this thing passes. I would totally be remiss if it passes because these guys, they're not thinking about Donald Trump. They're thinking about you. They're thinking about their jobs. It's their jobs that are at risk. Not from Donald Trump, but from their voters. And it's a damn shame that Donald Trump is trying to twist their arms, threaten them to vote for his health care bill when their constituency, their voters, tell them not to. Now, who will they listen to, Donald Trump or the people who put their asses in office and the people who can take them out? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Welcome, folks. I'm in one of my rants again because, you know, we are we are living in some dark times, just like the clip said at the beginning of the show. And we have to take this country back. Donald Trump is, if you read that budget, I mean, that health care bill, you would be astonished at what's in it. Basically, it's throwing, from what I'm hearing, is going to throw by, from starting from this point to 2020, is going 24 million people going to be thrown off out of health care. And starting just this year alone, by this year and 2018, 14,000 people would be thrown off health care. This is what Donald Trump wants. Donald Trump making all these big ass cuts. Why is he making these cuts? Because he's trying to take money from these vital programs that are out here helping people, helping the environment, and everything else. And he wants to take that money and put it towards building a wall. I actually think that there is no wall that's going to be built. Because if Donald Trump loses on this vote tomorrow and this bill does not pass, which it looks likely, he's gonna be a failed president. If this doesn't pass for Donald Trump, there will be no wall, or it will be harder for him to try to get a wall. You know, and it's vital that he gets a win. Donald Trump needs a win because lately he's been losing on a lot of things. And there are so many talk shows and so many cable shows are saying that, and I'm saying it also, that the White House has lost all of its credibility. I mean, we have no credibility in Kellyanne Conway. There's no credibility in Sean Spicer. All these people are just mouthpieces and lies for Donald Trump. They try to defend something that's indefensible. And that's crazy. They lie about lying and still it was a nice quote. I can't think of it, about lying when they're lying, they've lied, or something to that effect. But anyway, this is the most untrustworthy White House in the history of the United States. The majority of the American people think that Donald Trump is the most dishonest. And I can't blame him because there's so much proof there. It's something. It's got to be something when you have a government that lies to you, blatantly lies to you all the time. All the time. Once Donald Trump gets caught up in a lie, he tries to lie his way out of it. And I don't have to tell you about that. This man is just unfit for office. I don't know if he's going to make 4 years, if he's going to make a year or 2 years, you know, especially when this investigation is going on under him. It's going to be hard for him to try to govern because everywhere he goes, everything that he says, there's going to be some reporter there asking him about this investigation, something he doesn't want to hear. His investigation into Russia and collusion with the Russians. If they find something there, this guy is going to be impeached. Because this is treason. It's a felony. More than 1 year in jail. It's a felony. He's going to be impeached. And then we're going to get Mike Pence. And then we're going to have to fight his ass because he's just this. I actually think Mike Pence is more presidential than Donald Trump. Donald Trump is learning it. And he's also learning that running America, trying to govern this country, is not the same as running a goddamn business. He's learning that. And he's also learning that he's not a dictator. People are not going to roll over for him. People are not going to let him do all of these rotten, low-down things to America and change America from being the America that we want it to be to being Trump America. It is not going to happen. This is not Trump America. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm on one of my rants, folks, and it happens. So we're going to do this, and we're going to be right back. It's let's do this. Oh, thank you. All right, welcome back to the I like that little laugh. welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. It's 6:25 straight up Chicago time, p.m. It is still daylight outside, folks, due to daylight savings time. It is great. It is wonderful. We can be outside a lot longer, and it's great. And the weather is nice. I'm hearing it's going to be 78 degrees on Friday. Friday, yes, 78 degrees Friday. And well, put it this way, they say 78 degrees this Friday. I'm going to wait and see if that happens, because some of these guys are wrong sometimes. The weather people, the meteorologists, they are just wrong sometimes. It might be 30 below zero, but we just have to wait and see. But it sounds good. It sounds great to be 78 degrees in the city of Chicago. And I hope it's great where you are. I hope it's wonderful where you are. And I hope you're doing fine. We did have a terrorist attack. We're going to talk about that later. A terrorist attack, I believe, in the UK, right outside the parliament. I think four people passed away, were killed. We're going to talk about that a little later. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram. I'm all over the place. Twitter, you name it. The George Wilder Jr. Show is there. Thanks for listening to the show, everybody. All right, 347-857-1762. All righty. Okay, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Well, hi, this is Brandy Miller, and I think I was scheduled to call in about four
you
minutes
were.
From now.
You were scheduled. I had a feeling it was you, but I had to make sure. Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, Brandy Miller on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And you, from my understanding, you're going to be talking about writing?
Yes, writing the life of your dreams.
One of my favorite subjects is writing. I love to talk about writing. All right, tell my audience about yourself. Give us a bio and just tell us what do you mean when you say you're gonna give us some ideas about writing.
Well, I started writing when I was 13 is the first time I started keeping a journal, and it was mostly to keep the story straight in my own head of what was going on in my life, because my mom was one of those people that could reinvent the story of what happened 5 minutes after it actually took place. So in order to keep my own sanity, I started keeping a journal just so I could keep track of what really happened. And then, but I'd always loved reading. I'd always thought about becoming a writer, but I didn't actually take that first step forward until I was in my 30s. And I went to a convention, and they were talking about National Novel Writing Month. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called NaNoWriMo. And you spend a whole month, the whole month of November, no less, writing a book, one novel.
Oh,
and that's your goal.
Wow, that's great.
Through 50,000 words in a month. And the first time I did it, I didn't actually have an ending. When I got to 50,000 words, I didn't know where the story was going. But it gave me the courage to believe that I could do it. So the next year when I followed up and did it again, then it was easier to get to that 50,000 words. And I did get to an ending that time. I still didn't like the book and I never released it. But that's the truth about writing in general. It's a craft like any other. Every time you write a book, you're learning to do it better than the last time you did it.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah, so that was my big experience. My big breakthrough was first writing those books that you never want to see the light of day because you know just how bad they are.
Brandy.
Like, I can't believe I wrote this. Yes.
You know, every writer, every author is different. Every writer comes at their craft differently than some other writer. So we're all different. We're writers, but we come at our craft from different angles. But that doesn't make us, you know, any less of a writer if we come at it from different angles.
Oh no. Uh-uh.
I never journalize anything I write. I've got books, I've got short stories, I've got all kinds of things up on Amazon. And when I write, I just sit and write. I don't journalize anything. I don't outline anything. I just write. It just comes to me and I just put it down there on the paper. And I understand that there's a lot of people out here like you journalize, you outline, but it just doesn't. I tried it, but it didn't work. I just sit down and it just stuff. I pull stuff out of my head and throw it down on paper and put it up on Amazon. And hey, I'm getting a 5-star review. So,
well, good. I mean, that's absolutely true. Everybody's got their own technique.
Mm-hmm.
I did try what your technique, which is called writing by the seat of your pants. I tried that in the beginning and it didn't really work well for me. What I found was that there were too many plot conflicts that weren't resolved. There were too many errors. That continuity errors, problems that would crop up, or I would just flat get writer's block and not know where to take the story. So eventually I stopped writing by the seat of my pants and started doing what I would call a plot outline. Not really a, because if you take the time to actually outline it and you're determined that the story is going to stick to your exact outline the way it is, you're probably not going to have a lot of success writing, in my experience, because your characters are going to surprise you. And if they don't surprise you, they're not going to surprise the readers either.
Exactly.
And that's part of the problem. You have to let go of control. You may start the planning process because it gives you a place to begin and it gives you an idea of where things are headed. But in the end, it's not your story. And I think that's the hardest thing for a new writer to get their head wrapped around is this is not really your story. You're just a pen that was picked to tell the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And but you have to get out of character's way and let them take control.
Yeah, that's what I do. I get out of the character's way because a lot of times, like I just got through saying, I write by the seat of my pants. And I really have tried to outline. I really have tried to journalize, but I find it better if it just comes up out of my brain. And a lot of times I'll fictionalize some of the things that I have experienced throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story just comes to me as I write. It just bing, 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 bing as I write. And I push everything aside and just, hey, it's just me and the laptop right here and Microsoft Word. And that's it. And, it works for me, but like I said, we come at our craft from a different angles, and that's not a bad thing because a lot of people when they do journalize and outline, they are that's great work, but I can't seem to do it for some reason.
Well, but I don't. What I work from in terms of an outline is really. Mm-hmm. Pretty fast and loose. It's more that I get a five act I take the starting with the sentence about what the book's about. That's where I start. And then I break that down into basically five acts as if it were an action movie. Okay, what do I think is going to happen here? What I think is going to happen here? And then after that, what I'll do is I'll make a list of the characters that appear in those five acts. And characters aren't always people. Sometimes the character that's being grappled with is fear or death or, you know, maybe love even. What does that mean? You know, so characters can be loosely interpreted. I may have a representative human being that stands in for that concept character, but not always. And so basically once I've got the characters listed, then I let the characters dictate the story. From there, and, you know, I basically take and try to get inside their head. Who are they? What do they want out of life? What's their goal for this book? What's the motivation behind that goal? What's their greatest weakness and their greatest strength? Both the ones that they know and the ones that they don't know, because we all have blind spots. And so if you want your characters to be real, they've got to have some blind spots too.
I think some people might call it character development.
Yeah, it's those blind spots that give you the opportunity for character development, because that's what allows you to get to the epiphany moment, right? Have to learn in order to overcome that conflict.
One of the things I love about writing is that it's fun. And it is totally fun. Yeah. If it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it. It has to be fun. Because if it's fun to you, why are you doing it? It's going to be fun to the people who pick it up, buy it, and read it. They're going to have fun, too, because if it's fun to you. And that's one of the greatest things. It's fun. And well, I actually think...
I agree. And if you stop having fun, I would say stop. Because something is wrong. You've disconnected from the character, or you're disconnected from the plot. Something about it isn't right. And go back and get closer to the characters and get closer to the pot and pot. There's a Freudian slip, but get closer to the plot and figure out where you've gone wrong. Funny thing is, I don't smoke it, but I'm living in Denver, so I'm surrounded by it.
That's great. That's wonderful. Brandy, where are you calling from?
I am calling from Denver, Colorado.
Oh wow! You know what? This is I'm getting it off the subject a little bit, but anyway, when I was married, we had our honeymoon in Denver, Colorado. And
I can believe it. Beautiful.
Yeah,
place.
It was beautiful, wonderful place, great place. And then when we had our child, we named him Denver, after the city in Colorado.
Well,
so
not a bad name.
I just wanted to throw that out there, okay? have you written any books? Do you have anything published? Okay.
Yes, I do. I actually have six books that are published.
Wow.
And I currently have two in progress. One of them is a fiction book called If Words Could Kill, and it is about a book character brought to life through advanced 3D printing. The guy actually uses an advanced 3D printer, which, you know, that may sound for some people like it's totally implausible. If you do the research, they are actually working on using 3D printers to create bodies of soldiers so that they can replace the parts when the soldier has a wound without having to do a transplant. It's the person's DNA and everything. And that's actually part of what sparked the idea, was reading about that.
Yeah. What do you like about fiction?
Fiction is the truth told sideways. It's actually sometimes more honest than nonfiction is.
Yeah.
Because you really get to walk around in somebody else's life entirely. You get to see everything that's going on.
That's
Whereas
what I say.
With nonfiction... you're only presented a biased view of their life. You don't get the whole picture. But in a fiction book, you do know. You know exactly why they're doing what they're doing, even if they don't.
And I just love writing fiction. I've done nonfiction, but nonfiction is, if I can say, it's kind of boring to me because everything you nonfiction, you gotta try to look for details and things that are true. And fiction, you can just have your way with fiction. You can just, you know, make up anything you want within reason. And it's fun. It's more fun for me. Fiction is more fun for me. I can't speak for other people, but it's more fun for me than nonfiction. And I have done nonfiction.
You mentioned that because that is something that I'm tackling in one of the books that I'm writing, is how to stop mm-hmm. having boring nonfiction. And because for a long time I avoided nonfiction like the plague because it was boring. A lot of it reads very dry. A lot of it's very hard to stick with because it's just not, our brains are geared towards stories, and most nonfiction is not presented as a story. So it's both hard to digest and hard to remember mm-hmm. because our brains remember things by relationship and context. And so when you're not providing mm-hmm. people those relationships and those contexts, then they have to work really hard to actually digest the content you're presenting and remember it. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, if I present you a series of random numbers, but I have no context for you to remember those numbers, you're not likely to remember mm-hmm. them. I'll ask you about them in 5 minutes. You won't have a clue what I told you.
Yeah, well.
But for instance, if I give you two numbers, I'm pretty sure you can remember what they are because you'll have context for it. If I toss out the numbers 9/11, you already have a context for that. That's not going to be hard for you to remember. But if I toss out 12/13, that doesn't have a context for you.
I was going to ask, do you teach writing? Do you have a class mm-hmm. or something?
I do. Okay. I do. I teach online and mm-hmm. Mostly adults. And I enjoy it a great deal. I have a free Facebook group for writers that called the 40 Day Writers. And basically, my joy is in helping people learn to share the stories that they have inside of them. Because that's where people really process what life has tossed at them. And, you know, put it into a new context.
Why do you call it 40 Day Writers?
Because the first book that I wrote was called How to Write an Ebook in 40 Days or Less.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. That's great.
That was the first book that I wrote. Well, no, that wasn't the first book that I wrote. That was the first book I got published.
Okay. It sounds interesting because, you know, I mean, when I write, you know, I don't know if it's 40 days or 6 months or 7 months. I just write and I just lose all track of time. But sometimes I do put myself on a deadline to finish something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Another question.
Sure.
What distinguish, can you distinguish between the short story and the novel, or is there any distinction?
There is a distinction. It's the difference between a snapshot and a movie. Mm-hmm. A short story is a snapshot of a time, a place, an event. And a novel is more like a movie. It comes over a longer period of time with far more, usually far more characters and usually far more plot points involved. Mm-hmm. The short story is mm-hmm. pretty to the point. There is usually just one major plot point and one major conflict. And in a novel, you can have untold numbers of conflicts going on. I mean, obviously, you don't want to confuse the reader, but there can be layers and layers of conflict to unpack. And that's part of what drives people to keep reading with a novel, is seeing how all these different conflicts are going to resolve. How is the character going to get out of this mess?
Yeah. I have published a few short stories, and I find a short story, this is my opinion, I find short stories can sit right next to a novel. It depends. When I write a short story, I have to get to the meat of the short story quickly because it's short. I have to try to grab my readers quickly because it's going to end shortly. When I do a short story, I do between 20 and 30,000 words. Okay. And
that's
have
technically
been,
not a short story. That's technically a novella.
Okay.
Short stories are usually like less than 10,000 words.
Okay. I do more than 10,000 words, but I'm looking at but anyway, when I do this, I have to kind of let my readers know that this story is going to end abruptly. It's not a novel. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I have to get to the points, the real facts of the story and the points of the story real quick. I got to get to the meat of the story. And sometimes it works. It works. Mm-hmm. And the only complaints I get from writing a short story, if I can say short story, is that, well, George, it was too short. Well, George, it ended too abruptly. But that's basically what I get. You know, that I left them hanging or something, something to that effect, you know. But basically, I enjoy writing short stories because the reason why I enjoy it, I can do 6 or 7 short stories a year. And during that same time, it will take me to write a novel because my head is always coming up with something. So I can write more short stories using 20,000, maybe 25,000 words in a year than I would a novel that's titled with just a title, if I said that correctly. Mm-hmm. I might have screwed it up, so.
No, you're fine. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Definitely, short stories do quite often take less time to write, so it is easier to knock them out. And part of it is because the scope is much shorter and much tighter. You're not introducing as many characters. You're not introducing as many conflicts. Your goal is to take the reader on a journey, but it's a much shorter, more intense journey than
the
novel. Yeah.
Because there have been movies made from short stories.
Oh yeah. No, a short story. Mm-hmm. You can make a movie out of a short story. You can actually, you can actually take the short story you've written and turn it into a novel. I've known writers who have done that. That's where they started, was the short story. The short story itself provided a test for the content. If somebody demanded more after you finished the short story, then you go ahead and develop it into a novel because you know you've already got an audience.
Yeah,
and I'm a big believer in testing before investing in anything, right? And and that includes your writing, right? If you're if you're gonna invest your time and your energy and your effort in writing, then test it. See if you've got an audience potential for it. What do the people who would potentially read your book want to see? That's actually how I picked the novel that I'm working on right now. I had about 10 different log lines. Which is the log line is the sentence description of the book. I had about 10 different log lines that I put out there on my Facebook feed. And I said, okay, these are the things that I'm working on or that I'm considering working on. And I would like you to vote on which ones you would like to see. And so then I weighted the votes because originally it was like almost a tie between all of them, which is good news and bad news at the same time. It didn't help me clarify what my goal was, but it meant that everything was interesting. So it interested at least somebody, which is the good news for a writer. But I weighted the selection and then ended up picking the one that came out on top.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm working on it for a good deal.
There's a lot of books and short stories. I mean, millions of this kind of stuff published every single year. People are writing their butts off. They're publishing like crazy every year. Some people are saying people are publishing daily. So if you're just writing a book and you've just published it, knowing that a lot of books are out there on the shelf, millions of books, how would you make your book stand out from all the rest of those books that are out here trying to make a name for themselves? How would you make your book stand out?
The tip that I have, if you want to really make your book stand out, is know who your ideal reader is. Mm-hmm. Who is the person? And usually you can figure that out by taking a look at your main character. Because your main character is going to become the hero of that book. and their journey is going to in some way reflect what the reader goes through. So if you take a look at where your main character starts and where they end up, is a hero. Where they begin is usually where the reader is in their life. Something about their life close to it. I mean, it's not going to be an exact match, obviously. But there's a parallel there. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to empathize with the main character. So,
yeah, I agree.
Take that person, and that is who you need to find. Where do they hang out?
Yeah.
You know, go meet them.
Yeah.
If you are writing a book that you know is geared toward, let's say, 30-year-old male to work in the IT industry, well, you might want to check out Reddit. It probably is. He's probably not on Facebook. You know,
probably not.
He's probably hanging out on Reddit.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
You need to really take a look at who that main character is and who's going to resonate with that main character the most and their journey.
Author Brandi Miller on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay. It's a lot of people out there who want to write, who are thinking about writing. How would you encourage them to write?
Well, the first thing I want to tell is that you have a story that's interesting. Your life is a story. I mean, everybody has a story that's worth telling inside of them. So don't discount yourself and don't say, well, nobody would ever read what I write. If you know how to package it correctly, people will want to read it.
Yeah.
The second thing I would say is that look through your life for those areas that you have been shoving in the back closet, the thing that you really don't want anybody to know, and start with that. Because believe it or not, that is your most powerful, that mess that you've been trying to hide, that's where your most powerful message happens to lie.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
That period of your life that you have desperately tried to hide from everybody, drag that thing out of the closet and look at it. From a perspective of your modern day self, because you're going to see different things than you did back then. And not only will it make you feel better about your life, but it will help somebody who's where you were at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't be afraid to explore those things, because that's where the magic really comes from. A lot of my characters, when I look at them, I don't start out thinking they're going to be from my life, but by the time I'm a few chapters into it, it doesn't take much to recognize, I know who that is.
Brandi Miller on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Can you tell us where we can find your books? Can you give us a website where we can go by and check
absolutely.
You out? And, no problem.
It's 40daywriter.com, 40-D-A-Y. Writer, WRITER.com is my website. And then you can just do a search for Brandi Miller or Brandi M. Miller on Amazon, and you'll find all my books there.
Great. I'm writing that down. I hope you guys out there are writing this down too. Hey, Brandi, thanks for being on the show. You were great. You were wonderful, and you gave us a lot of insight. I'm even learning something. So,
I appreciate you having me on.
No problem. 40 days, 40daywriters.com.
40daywriters.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay. 40 day, not days, 40daywriters.com.
Not day, 40. Yep. 40 day writer.
40 day writers. I wrote it down. Thanks for being on the show. And I hope you come back. I enjoyed you, and I hope you come back.
Glad to be back.
I want to send you a link to the show, this show that you're on right now, and you can put it up on your Facebook page, or you can put it up on your website or blog or whatever. Or
I will
you like
put
that?
It everywhere, all over the internet.
It'll
be happy to.
All right, it's your show, so you're on it. So they'll be coming. They'll click on it and they'll hear you on the show, and you can,
awesome.
Give them all your insight on and your expertise on writing. All right, thanks for being on the show. We'll be in touch. Bye bye.
Thank you for having me. You have a great day, George.
Bye bye. All right, Brandi Miller on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She was great. She was wonderful. We try to have people on the show that can help you out there. I mean, she's a writer and I'm a writer. If you have any questions about writing, you can contact her, contact me, or you can contact anybody you want to. As long as you write, get out what you want to do. It's all about you.
Services paid for through the Ukrainian president's political party.
I think it's not all money for him. It's more like for his activity as well, for his campaigning activity, for some technical issues of his activity as a spin doctor. $12.7 million is an incredibly high amount of money. But for Ukraine corrupt politicians, it was not so impressive.
But why would such payments matter to the U.S. investigation of the Russian hacking scandal? Because the former Ukrainian president, Manafort's client, was a Kremlin ally. Suggestion there was a corrupt river of money flowing from the Kremlin as part of a scheme to elect Donald Trump and get a more pro-Russian president in the White House.
Why is it so far-fetched to blame the Russians and say that the motive was to help you?
I mean, it's just absurd. I don't even know what you're talking about. It's crazy.
when reports came out during the Republican convention that the Trump camp pushed the Republican Party in its platform to ease up on criticism of Russia for invading Ukraine, Manafort pushed back.
It absolutely did not come from the Trump campaign. I don't know who everybody is, but I guarantee you.
So nobody from the Trump campaign wanted that change in the platform?
No one. Zero.
Amid these latest developments, Manafort's most recent statement says, in part, I had no role or involvement in the cyber attacks on the DNC. I have never spoken with any Russian government officials or anyone who claimed to have been involved. The suggestion that I have ever worked to undermine the interest of the United States is false. And yet, investigators keep looking at this chain of connections from President Trump to his one-time campaign manager, Paul Manafort, to a former president of Ukraine, to Moscow, and wondering if they can find anything actually nefarious along the way here, or just what the White House insists is there. Only a witch hunt. Don?
Tom Foreman, thank you very much. Let's bring in now senior political analyst Carl Bernstein, the legendary journalist and author, and John Dean, the former counsel to the Nixon White House. John, I'm going to steal your line. You told me in the commercial break, we have more collective knowledge of Watergate on this show than probably anywhere else. So thank you both for coming on. Good to see you both. So, John, as I said, you were Nixon's general counsel at the White House during Watergate. When you look at this situation, what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. As somebody who's been involved in a cover-up on the inside, this has an awful lot of the sound and look and feel of a cover-up. These are not people who are disclosing, they're denying. They're dissembling on many facts. They're getting caught on some of those. I would suspect Carl, as a former investigative reporter, would just wet his chops over this one because it really looks like a cover-up going on.
Carl, what do you think?
I don't think there's any question that there is a cover-up, and people in the FBI will tell you that there is a cover-up going on involving a fair number of people. The question is, what is being covered up, and we don't know. How might that go to Donald Trump or might not go to Donald Trump? We don't know. There are associates of Donald Trump. I think the piece that we just saw is very focused just on Manafort. There is a constellation of people looking, and the FBI is looking at the question of whether or not the hacking of the DNC, those emails of John Podesta, whether people around Donald Trump had prior knowledge of those emails. There's some evidence that some of them, particularly Roger Stone, who we'll talk about a little later, did. But I think we need to look at the whole question of what is under investigation here, and it is a big ticket. It's nothing quite so small as a straight line from Manafort to the Kremlin. It's a lot wider than that.
Yeah. Let's talk about how people in Washington are reacting, and particularly Republicans, because John McCain was my colleague Manu Raja caught up with John McCain earlier tonight. He also has concerns about Paul Manafort. Listen to this.
I have serious questions about some of the people around the presidential campaign. There were people with close ties to the Russians, and including an individual who was paid large sums of money by Yanukovych, who was the Russian stooge as the president of Ukraine.
You're talking about Paul Manafort specifically?
I'm talking about Mr. Manafort, his relations.
John, you know that John McCain, I mean, he has been out there. He has long been critical of President Trump's affinity towards Russia. But the fact is that we're hearing this from a Republican lawmaker, a key Republican lawmaker. That is key in itself.
It is surprising. It's actually encouraging that somebody on the Hill is taking a little distance, not being simply a shield for the White House at this point. By and large, the Republicans are giving the White House an awful lot of cover, but the senator is not, and nor is Lindsey Graham. So it's kind of nice and refreshing. We've also seen a little bit of movement on the House side, where a few Republicans are getting to question this. But it's not deep there at all.
Yeah. Carl, I want to talk to you about this. I was hoping I had you on yesterday, but I have you on today. So President Trump attacked the media in tweets. He does it all the time. Yesterday, calling the media fake news, that was ahead of the Comey hearing. And listen to this. This is Nixon taking on the media.
I have never heard or seen such outrageous, vicious, distorted reporting in 27 years of public life. Don't get the impression that you aroused my anger.
impression. You say, I have that impression.
You see, one can only be angry with those he respects.
So nothing has been found yet, right? But plenty of presidents have had it out with the press. Does this feel like it did during Watergate? Is this a Watergate 2.0, Carl?
Well, first of all, Nixon tried to make the issue in Watergate the conduct of the press rather than the conduct of the president and his men. And to a certain extent, or a large extent, Donald Trump is doing the same. I think we got to look at a couple fundamental differences. One, we live in a different age than the time of Watergate. We have a political system that basically doesn't work. It worked at the time of Watergate. You had a 77-0 vote by the Senate of the United States to undertake a real select committee investigation into the President of the United States and his activities. And you have nothing similar to that happening now. No such bipartisan approach. The other difference is I think that Richard Nixon was a far less dangerous man than Donald Trump. That we have two very different characters that we're talking about here. Yes, we are talking about a possible conspiracy, certainly involving people around the president while he was a candidate, before he was the president, perhaps or perhaps not involving the president, but we don't have any solid evidence of that at this point. But a very different situation. Richard Nixon was a capable, able man who understood history, understood the institutions of the United States government. We don't have that with Donald Trump. We now have a president of the United States who has accused his predecessor in an outrageous bit of lying. We have a serial compulsive liar as the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. Richard Nixon was a criminal president. He lied to cover up his criminality. But I think it's very different than when you have someone like Trump who lies in a way we have never seen a president of the United States lie routinely, make things up out of whole cloth, have a press secretary who himself invents things or goes along with these crazy inventions of the president. Very different.
Yeah, lying about the lies that they lied about is how the saying goes. John, you know, Carl talked about Roger Stone. President Trump's association with these men, all these connections with Russia now, you see that Manafort, Flynn, in particular Roger Stone, they've all denied any sort of collusion. But how problematic is this now?
Well, Stone has slowly backed off from some of his denials and admitted more things. We know Roger is somebody who prides himself on being a dirty trickster, which is quite amazing. In fact, I find it amazing anybody would have a tattoo of Richard Nixon on their back. Strikes me as my gear might have shifted somewhere in there. But I think that Stone is certainly capable of doing anything. I don't buy his denials. He's been with Trump for many, many years, tried to encourage him to run for president. Then he had a falling out once he did because he wouldn't follow his advice. Roger is a deep conspiracy theorist. He has alternative views of most major historical events. And I'm sure that he's very uncomfortable being in a real conspiracy right now, and I think he is.
Yeah, you mentioned the tattoo. The location would be interesting as well. That makes a difference. John, if you were advising the president now, what would you advise him?
I'd advise him to lawyer up. He's got a rookie White House counsel who I don't think has deep criminal law experience, and that's how the mistakes were made at the Nixon White House. I remember warning Ehrlichman very early that I had no criminal law experience, and he brushed it aside, and it was one of the early mistakes we made. So I think that's what they need to be doing.
Yeah.
You mentioned one similarity here between Watergate, and I don't want to go too far.
You got to go quick for me, Carl.
The nature of some of these people, Flynn, Stone, others who are off the reservation, who are not considered very solid folks. They're a little bit like Hunt and Liddy, the Watergate burglars, and I'm not going to say criminally like them, but in terms of being people who have a reputation for not quite thinking in a very straight line, we've got a similarity here.
Dean and Bernstein, it's 1974 all over again. It's recent.
But even General Flynn was a volunteer of the campaign. And then obviously there's been discussion of Paul Manafort, who played a very limited role for a very limited amount of time.
Let's discuss now. Washington Post contributor Sally Quinn is here, the founding editor of On Faith. CNN political commentators Matt Lewis and Jason Miller and Carl Bernstein is back with us. Matt, I don't want to fight again tonight. You as well, Jason. So we're going to be on our best behavior, right? Sally, welcome to the program. It's so good to have you. I'm going to give you the first question. So you heard Sean Spicer say Paul Manafort had a limited role in the campaign. We all know that that is not true. What do you make of this attempt by the White House to create some distance between these guys and the president?
Well, you know, one of the things that's so fascinating to me, and you were talking earlier about the difference between this and Watergate, is that these guys don't know how to cover up. And so it all seems to be very inept. I mean, for them to say, well, he had no role in the campaign is ridiculous because, of course, he was the campaign manager. So how could he possibly say that?
The chairman. Now, he was the chairman.
He was chairman. So, I mean, if you are going to make something up or if you're going to try to cover something up, you don't say something that is so blatantly false that it can be proven by everyone. Now, of course, that's what's been happening all along anyway, and so I think we're all used to that. But in terms of what do I make of it, I finally, even though it's not funny, I have to laugh.
Yeah. My saying, well, as you know, my saying it's not funny, but it's laughable, and there is a difference.
Yes.
There's a difference
exactly.
in that. Yeah, Jason, I interviewed Paul Manafort on this show last May. I also interviewed him on other shows, New Day, I think, when I filled in, and I think Aaron's show when I filled in for Aaron. But last May on this show, while he was still the campaign convention manager, about a week before he was promoted to campaign chairman. Take a look at this.
He's an incredible candidate. His personality is just gigantic. And he's very smart. He understands how to communicate things that people relate to. And he's got the courage not to let conventional wisdom or political correctness get in the way of his connections.
All right, that was Don Lemon, his cable talk show. I try to get a little bit of that in there because it's so insightful. And I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed my guest, Brandi Miller. Thanks for being on the show. She was exciting and riveting. Okay, GOP, grand old party. Republicans, it seems that the health care bill is in the flux. From what I'm seeing by all reports, they do not have the votes. But if you listen to Paul Ryan, you would think it's a slam dunk. This guy is just eating out of Trump's boot. I mean, and he loves it. He loves it. You know, Paul Ryan is one of the, in my estimation, is one of the most corrupt guys on Capitol Hill. Right there with Mr. Trump. This guy is something. Anyway, the health GOP reps changes to health care vote is a hell no. That's a quote from one of the Republicans that's supposed to be voting for this thing tomorrow. Somehow he will not be. And I'm hearing that Donald Trump doesn't have the vote to get this thing passed, this Obamacare thing. And then after, if this passes, which I doubt, but if it passes, this is going to be a win for Donald Trump. If it does not pass, it's going to be another failure. It's going to be another thing he did not win, and he's going to be mad. But let's say if it does passes, and then he's going to try and get his budget through the House. That's going to be the next thing if this passes. But if this health care bill, the way it is now that the Republicans have mapped it out, if it does not pass, it's going to be tough to get his budget through. And it's going to be real tough. Donald Trump is sitting at 37%, ladies and gentlemen. And the Republicans are not on board. I mean, their constituency is telling them do not vote for this bill or they will not be voted. They will lose their jobs, put it that way. And Donald Trump is trying to say, screw them, screw your constituency. The hell with the voters. Vote the way I want you to vote. And Donald, it doesn't go that way. Okay. This is a democracy. It doesn't go that way. You know, so We just have to see what's going to happen tomorrow. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. We have some problems here. I'm trying to get this thing to, you know, all my Facebook friends in a way can listen to the show as live, but something is awry here, and we have to take care of that soon. Anyway, this thing is monumental for Trump because he's been losing, and he's been pissed off about that, and now he wants to win. But like I said before, if this health care bill, this Obama backbreaker, doesn't get the votes needed tomorrow, which is Thursday from the date of this show, Donald Trump is going to be in trouble. It's going to be tough for him to get a lot of things passed. You know why? Because the people are standing up. The people are demanding from their representatives to do the right thing. The people are demanding that they resist Donald Trump, that the people who they voted for, put in office, put in Congress, stand up against Donald Trump, even if they don't want to. Because the midterms are going to tell it all. And I do think the midterms for 2018, I do think a lot of these jackasses are going to be voted out of office, regardless of what they do. I mean, the people just aren't going to stand it because a lot of people don't like Donald Trump. They're going to vote somebody in there that's going to be going against Donald Trump. I mean, a lot of these representatives who are up for re-election next year, they already have opponents. They have opponents. For example, Illinois hasn't had a budget for 3 years. 3 years, and we have a governor who refuses to enact one. He's coming up with all kinds of crazy scenarios and spin and lies to say why he will not enact the budget for this state. And by the Illinois Constitution, that's his job, is to get a budget. That's the biggest job he has, is to get a budget for this state, and he refuses. He's blaming it on other people. He's not getting what he wants, so he's not going to enact the budget. 3 years this state has been without a budget. He is the worst governor. Bruce Rauner is the worst governor in the history of Illinois, just like Donald Trump is the worst president of the history of the United States. You know, because these people are hurting the state. There's no doubt about it. Donald Trump is not making America great again. He never had any intention of making America great again. We all know that now. That was just a lie and a con to get votes. Okay. Bruce Rauner of the state of Illinois, the governor, he had no intention of ever lifting Illinois up out of his debt syndrome. The only thing this guy has done is made it a lot worse. And the thing about both of them is that they both want to run for re-election. Donald Trump's talking about running again in 2020. Bruce Rauner is talking about running again in 2018. And they have done absolutely nothing positive at all. But they want to get back in office. This is not going to happen because I think people have smarted up. They've got more information. They're more engaged, and they are going to vote these assholes out. There's no way Bruce Rauner is going to win. Too many people are suffering under him, and they will suffer under him. A state without a budget, give me a break. And the opponents lining up to take this guy's job is just around the corner. These people are lining up around the corner to take Bruce Rauner's job because why? They know he's vulnerable. They know he's weak. They know he has low poll numbers in this state of Illinois. But he can't seem to grasp it that he is not good for Illinois. He never was. I didn't vote for the guy. I had enough sense to not to vote for Bruce Rauner, but a lot of people did not. You don't vote. I've said this several times. You don't vote. That's a vote for a Republican. Why let your vote be used by a Republican? Use your own vote. I'm not voting. To hell with it. No, I'm not voting. Okay. Your food stamps are going to get cut. Oh, I better get out there and vote then. It's crucial to vote in 20. You didn't vote in 2016 because we got Donald Trump. You didn't vote in 2016 because we got a Republican Congress. You didn't vote in 2016 because we got Republican governors all over America. You didn't vote, people. And they're wreaking havoc on you, and they're wreaking havoc on your state. You didn't vote. Oh, yeah, you voted for Hillary Clinton, probably. But that's all. But you needed to vote for your congressman, and you needed to vote for your a senator. You didn't vote. You just walked in that booth and just, you know, voted for Hillary Clinton, and you didn't vote for anything else. And I've said a million times last year before the election, you have to vote a straight ticket. If you're going to vote for president, you got to vote for your senator, you got to vote for your representative, or you're going to be doomed. And we are doomed because we've got the Republicans controlling everything, and they are making a mess and a mockery of the Constitution and of the United States. We all can see that. Filled with nothing but untruth, falsehood, and downright lies. Because you didn't vote. Hopefully, we can turn this thing around in 2018, okay? Donald Trump will still be in office in November of 2018, maybe. But still in all, you can vote to change Congress. That way, if you vote to change Congress, we can put some checks and balances on this administration. Without that, there will be no checks and balances on this administration because the Republicans are aiding and abetting Donald Trump. Doesn't matter what he does. They're aiding and abetting him. Look at, I mean, you just look at that stupid face on Paul Ryan. Every time he's sitting beside Donald Trump, he has a stupid look on his face. Even if he's talking about Donald Trump, he has a stupid look on his face. Do not believe anything that comes out of his mouth. He's heartless. He's a thug. And he doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care. You know, he's always talking about the American people. The American people don't give a damn about you, man. They want you out. So if 2018 comes, we can always change the Speaker of the House, which is Paul Ryan. We can throw him out on his ass and you know, have another Speaker of the House, maybe maybe a Democrat or a progressive, you know, because at least we got to see what Republicans are all about. Maybe this is a good thing that the Republicans are controlling everything, because we get to see what the hell they're about, and we get to mobilize with protests and rallies to say that we're not going to take this crap from these people who don't seem to give a damn about grassroots people out here, who doesn't seem to give a damn about the poor, the old people, the elderly, the children, the disabled, these people, the environment, the bridges, the infrastructure, the lakes, the waters. They don't seem to give a damn about any of that. Of course, Donald Trump wants to cut money from all of that stuff so he can put it into a pot to build a fucking wall. And if he doesn't get this healthcare bill passed tomorrow, there will probably be no wall, because he's too far down in the polling in America, even for Congress to support him. Remember, Congress is just made up of senators and representatives. They are voted in. They can be voted out. And I got a feeling that they will be voted out, because Americans are just so pissed off and mad at this administration, at this government that does nothing but throw lie after lie after lie after lie, a pathological liar. Kellyanne Conway, she's not credible anymore. Why do these cable shows have her on television? Sean Spicer, he's not credible. I mean, every time I get on my computer, it's saying up here at the top, a little ticker is saying Sean Spicer, press secretary, is giving a press briefing. I don't want to hear what he's got to say. the man can't tell me anything. He can't tell me nothing whatsoever. And I hope he can't tell you anything because he lies. I mean, he's licking Trump's boots. What can I say? You know, and it's evident that Kellyanne, all of these people around him, they're yes people. Trump only wants people around here, around him, sorry. Trump only wants people around him that's going to kiss his ass. That's all. It's all about Trump. And I take a difference when people say that this is Trump America, Trump's America. This is not Trump America. This is America. America belongs to the people. The White House belongs to the people, not Trump. They're disrespecting it in every way because we got goons and thugs up in the White House. The Godfather. Trump is the Godfather. So we got to do some really soul searching come November 2018, folks. We got to vote these people out. You got to get out there and do what you have to do because we are in trouble with this guy.
Bombs begin to fall. Everyone ever saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl.
Thank you for tuning into the George Wilder Jr. Show. Hope you guys join me tomorrow. It's going to be another fun day, another fun show, another great guest. And I want to say it's been great. It's been wonderful. Thank you for your accolades of the show. Thank you for everything, your reviews of my books and your reviews of the show. And we will be joining me right here. Bye-bye, everybody.